Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I just wanted to preface the episode by saying the sound quality on this one is not the best. Unfortunately, the sound gods were not in my favor on this. I did speak with Maria, and we both decided together to just put it out as is. This podcast is meant to be authentic and real and raw, and we just figured that it's very difficult to recreate a conversation and energy, so here it is as is. It's a beautiful podcast, and I hope you enjoy it. Welcome to the Midlife Rewired Podcast. We are at episode 22, and I am very grateful to have a special guest with me today. Her mission is to be in service in life, and she truly is just that. She's helped thousands of people by combining plant medicines and sound in all of their manifestations to bring health and inner peace into the human experience. She's a mother, and she is a friend. Thank you so much, Maria Garnett, for joining me today on the podcast.
Hello.
So, Maria, you have had an absolutely incredible life. I don't think I've met or will ever meet anybody with quite a unique background and story as yours. So I was hoping we could start there today to kind of introduce that. Maybe you could share a little bit about your story, and then we can kind of segue from there into how your spiritual journey began.
Sure. Well, I was born in Russia, and in 2000, I immigrated to Canada, where for some time I worked in film industry, after which I traveled and ended up first living some time in Brazil, and then moved to Peru full-time for probably 8 years, where I studied and apprenticed in Amazonian shamanic tradition, working with plants. And in 2013, I crowdfunded and built a treehouse retreat dedicated to healing and supporting environment and cultures of people that live in the Amazon. And I ran the project for a few years, and at some point I did let it go to come back to the West and start a family. And now I'm a mother to a 1-year-old.
So that's quite an amazing story. So there's a lot of detail in there. I read that you were in India for a while as well. What led you to Peru, I guess? Like, was it specifically for the purpose of apprenticing as a shaman?
Well, the journey to Peru really was a fateful journey. I went just as a tourist with my friends, and I met a person who was facilitating ayahuasca ceremonies, and I took part. At that moment, I didn't know, but it really was a life-changing experience. After I came back from India, so many things became uprooted, and I found myself really just with a decision to stay in Canada or to go down south. And I was very young still at that point. I was 25, I think. Nothing was tying me down, and I packed up and left for what I thought was going to be a 6-month journey to the middle of the forest, where I drank and did plant dietas with mestizo curanderos or healers or shamans. And, well, 6 months became 8 years.
So at the point then you decided to establish Cataluz, you know, I also read a story about just finding the location and how much time you spent. I think you were kind of like you were about a month or so just kind of trekking around looking for a place. Is that accurate?
Yeah, yes, that's correct. At some point, one of my teachers was not able to work at the place that she used to do. So I really wanted to help her. And I also met my business partner at the time, Frank Zuniga, who owned a piece of land in the forest. And we decided to combine all these elements together with another Canadian contributor. And we had to find a building space in this, I think this, the territory was 600 hectares. And we needed a place that had a clean running water and was still within maybe an hour of walking distance to the river, because you come in by the boat to the river. But the territory was so vast, and these parameters, we also were looking for big, strong trees on which we could build tree houses, because that was part of our dream. And yeah, we spent, well, not in months, but we spent a good 2 weeks walking around and sleeping under tarps during the rain season. So it was constantly like being inside a hot shower. It was really hot and really wet and many mosquitoes. And it actually happened that on the last day of those allocated 2 weeks that we gave ourselves, we found a place that was elevated, but close to the creek, and we collected the water and tested the water, and it was good to drink. And yeah, we found the site that still had to be cleared and everything else that comes with construction.
Right. So now you've got the spot. How long does it take before you've created your first treehouse there?
Because we were building many buildings at the same time, including living quarters and kitchens, I think we actually broke a bottle of champagne on the first treehouse a year later. So it took a year for completion, but it really wasn't like done. And
such a lofty goal and vision to do something like this. At some point along the way, were you like, I mean, I'm sure this thought came up, but did you ever come close to saying, forget it, this is too much, I'm going home? Or did you always intend to see this through?
Every day, practically. I think, you know, I had the drive and inspiration that you have when, you know, maybe you're younger. And I didn't really have anything to come back to at that point. I was making my life in Peru, and that was going to be my way of life. And also the project was supported by a lot of people through crowdfunding. We actually raised, I'm trying to remember, I think something like $32,000. So I had an obligation. I had an obligation to finish it. There was just no other way and no way back, and that was happening, and had to just go with it.
Now, were you doing your apprenticeship in parallel to building this building the place, or did you wait till that was ready and then you start your apprenticeship? Was it all kind of working together at the same time?
Well, the apprenticeship never stops, right? It's something that you forever practice and can learn.
Right.
But by that point, I have already been drinking medicine for 8 years.
Okay.
No, not eight, maybe six. So I had already some experience under my belt. And then I was bringing one of my teachers to work there with me. So we were continuously working with the medicine throughout the whole process. So the work was still happening.
I mean, I've read some interesting books about the rainforest and people who dare to go there. And you know, did you stay healthy? Did you get very sick at any point along the way?
I was generally very healthy, but at some point I did get very sick with mercury poisoning. And it brought to light a very big problem that we were facing. Well, I still facing in the region of Madre de Dios in Peru, which is illegal gold mining. It's a gold that's in, you know, it's a sand in the river form and in the earth, and artisanal crews, meaning, you know, groups of people from, well, one person to dozens, go in and blast off the top layer of soil, or sift through the rivers to get to the sand, and then use mercury to separate it. But that mercury gets dumped back into the river system. And at that point, I was transitioning from being a vegetarian to allowing myself to eat fish, just because it wasn't really sustainable to always get fresh produce in the forest. And I thought I was making a healthy choice by eating local fish without really knowing what's in it. And in the end, I did suffer quite severe mercury poisoning that took me a couple years to get out of my system.
Wow. So a man-made condition, not nature itself created that.
No, I never got bitten by no snakes. I did get bitten by giant hornets in my hand.
Okay.
As a rite of initiation.
Fair enough. The wildlife obviously would be abundant there, and I was super fascinated when I saw some photos of jaguar prints. I mean, it's just something about large predators that really fascinates me. But any super or special memorable wildlife encounters that stand out for you?
Well, realizing that we have jaguars living on our territory definitely was a highlight. And first, we were seeing the prints. There were a few sightings I personally never saw, and I'm a little bit sad about it, but there were signs of jaguars everywhere. And during close seasons, when, for example, I was in Canada and just our little team on the ground, they were talking about them coming close and, you know, even trying to hunt our dogs and cats.
Wow.
It's a very humbling experience, realizing that you are a guest in the forest.
Yeah, very, that's interesting. Okay, so now the facility set up, you've built it. How long was it before you were able to start to hosting ceremonies there?
We were hosting ceremonies even as we were building.
Okay.
Our first guests were actually our friends from Canada, also the ones that have been supporting my work for a while. So they were coming in with understanding that it's, you know, unfinished facility, and we really ran in ceremonies in buildings with no walls. Like, as soon as we had the roof, that was good enough for sleeping. Yeah. And
right,
the work never stopped,
ongoing. Okay, so when you do a ceremony there in Peru, how long would people typically come to do it? So, you know, for example, if somebody from another country came there, would they come for a week? I mean, it's not easy to access, correct? So they would have to commit a certain amount of time. What would be a typical duration there for someone to visit?
Well, obviously, we have to work with people coming from the West, and it's not always possible to take lots of time off. So we did do retreats of 1 week duration with three ceremonies. A better choice would be 2 weeks, where you could have a planned dieta in the middle. It's a time when you go in isolation and in the learning of a certain plant. You know, if you could come for a month, well, the longer the better. But definitely, we worked a lot with 1 and 2 week visits.
Okay, and then how many like consecutive days of a ceremony would that be? I know you mentioned the plantieta and the mental. How many days of ceremony in a row would typically be?
Yeah, usually we didn't do ceremonies back to back, but it is
okay
for sure. So we would take a day in between to rest and, you know, to begin the integration work and talk and
rest,
right? But in 1 week, you would go for three ceremonies, or if you wanted to do plant dieta, you would have two ceremonies in the beginning, then go away into the dieta tambo, which is a little hut, and then come out and have two more ceremonies.
Okay, so are you considered then, are you officially a shaman now? I mean, people use that word very loosely these days because this has become a lot more mainstream, I guess, in terms of people's interest and you know, discussion around it and even acceptance. Would you be considered a shaman, or how would you describe yourself?
Well, I am being very careful using that word, and I don't apply it to myself, especially since I also do have an action in the background with Siberian shamanism, and I did some work also in Siberia. And those people are real shamans, and that's where the term comes from. And it's a different type of work. In Peru, there are several terms used, and they all have a little bit of a different meaning. So you can, I could call myself an arastera. I wouldn't necessarily call myself a healer or curandero, because this is somebody who specializes more in treating the health conditions. I usually either I call myself either a medicine woman, because I do work with medicines, and my medicines are plants and sound, right? Sound has become a big aspect of the work that I do. And or I can call myself a facilitator. I facilitate healing that happens through the medicine and through the person themselves doing their own work. I facilitate the ceremony. So I do find that term also quite applicable.
There's a quote of yours that I really like and resonate with. And it was, there are experiences that cannot be described and only shared. And in my experience, that's been exactly what it is. People always ask, well, what was it? What does it mean? And it's really something it's very difficult to put into words. But with that said, I mean, it seems that in the ceremonies, there's quite a diverse amount of intentions for people that kind of enter the circle. But in my experience, it also seems that the results seem to be fairly consistent in, you know, greater awareness and healing. Is there like a common thread that you've noticed over the years in your experience that when people come out of this, that sort of encapsulates everybody, or is it just you find it to be varied, or what's your thoughts there?
It's a good question. Well, first of all, I don't even remember my own quote, but it sounds about right. While the experience with medicine each time is different and it's different for each person, but yes, there is definitely a shared or underlying sort of storyline or arc, right? People sometimes come to the medicine with very specific intentions and things they want to work through, be it grief or addiction or trauma. Many people come to the medicine to find a tool for healing and learning. And often our experiences begin with, you know, kind of things that are at the top of our priorities that we need to take care of, pressing issues, unresolved childhood traumas. And then once, you know, we sort of go a little bit deeper, the themes become more universal, about interconnectedness of all of us and us being part of nature. But I always have thought that the ultimate goal of working with the medicine and all of this work is for us to enjoy our human experience with all that comes with it, with all the love and pain and joy, and to have peace inside of us. And well, now I'm going to quote somebody else, Mother Teresa: if you want to change the world, go home and love your family. And to simplify something that cannot really be simplified, but this is one theme that's definitely always comes on a path, and it's a big one, and it's a very deep one, and I think it's at the base of all of it.
Yes, well, in my experience, I've had various attentions, and in hindsight, earlier on, they were sort of more ego derived, I think, than more than my soul speaking to me. Or, and the word healing was something that never resonated with me before. I just didn't think that I needed to be healed. I figured I was fine, but you know, I learned through this process that, you know, we all need to heal, and I needed to heal, and still need to heal. So it's very powerful in that regard. So that when people have a ceremony, what do you find is the best way that people can sort of integrate the lessons from this? Because I mean, ceremony is sort of the catalyst, but the work has to continue. So do you prescribe a system or something to people that, you know, they can sort of take this home and build?
Definitely. I think that process begins even before your ceremony. There is a preparation, there is a ceremony itself, and then there is an integration. So you are beginning to integrate the lessons into your life even before you drink, by first really answering what are your intentions for this work, focusing your own energy. So when you are in the medicine space, you sort of have a focus and a backbone to your experience and a place where you want to bring your attention to maybe help to guide the medicine into that direction, to receive the information, receive the healing. And often, right after the ceremony, we feel like we will never forget what happened to us or what didn't happen. So the first step, like in all of my ceremonies, in the morning we have a sharing circle where we try to share the lessons received, not just describing what happened chronologically during the night, but really trying to find that, you know, something that we can take with us further, and even something that we can share in a way that other people can benefit from sitting with us in a circle. Storytelling and retelling of your experiences. One way that just through verbal connection to your mind, you can help to retain it. I always recommend to spend some quiet time in maybe journaling about your ceremony, maybe speaking to somebody to whom you trust and share that experience. Art therapy, medicine, meditation. Sometimes people have very turbulent experiences, and sometimes I do recommend people even bring that work into therapy. Right now there's many professionals who understand the psychedelic medicine work, and they can also help people for whom the experience was intense. So this is the first steps that you can take.
Maria, the medicine is itself is considered a feminine medicine. I really didn't understand what that meant either, but I could feel that. How is it a feminine energy? How would we know that, or how would we describe that?
I have a mixed opinion on that. I think I'm not sure exactly where that expression even came from. It's not something that I've ever heard from my teachers or in Peru. Maybe this is something that specific to a particular group. But definitely I have experienced the grandmother, as they even call her, spirit of the medicine. And maybe it's that combination of being loving and stern that brings this comparison on. The feeling of return to the mother that we all remember from our infancy, the feeling of being taken care and safe, and caring energy is very feminine quality. So I think there is definitely some reflection to that, but I wouldn't necessarily hold it as something very kind of like strict rule or truth.
Interesting. Okay. So your journey is maybe, I don't know if it's a 15-year journey or so. What would you think is the greatest lesson that you've learned yourself?
The lessons sort of become simpler and simpler and deeper and deeper in that way. So this is something, as I already mentioned, I definitely have been on my own personal journey, and I think at this point it's culminated in me becoming a mother. It really was a conscious process that I brought into the medicine. Many things that had to be resolved, because I went from never wanting to have children and family in my 20s and slowly working and meeting my partner and consciously bringing another human into this life and dedicating myself to it. And I don't think I could have done it without bringing that into medicine space. I have definitely acquired, patience necessary to be a mother, but by working with so many people and seeing people's reactions and inner worlds, and learning about the reflection all of us into each other, and seeing how what I notice in other people, how it reflects on me and things within me, and me working through those things inside me helps my external relationships. I'm not sure if I can answer more specifically.
Yeah, no, thank you for sharing that. That's interesting and helpful. Now, so yeah, you are a fairly new mom. How has motherhood changed your perspective in life? Deep questions.
You're asking me global questions. It's like one ceremony nonstop. Like I just described to you living under a tarp in the forest.
Yes.
In medicine, that's nothing compared to having a kid.
Yeah. That's fair enough.
Still, it's teaching me every day, and I love experiencing joy of life through the eyes of my son. Being able to witness somebody experiencing things for the first time and just having so much joy from simple being, that's a profound learning. And sometimes, well, I don't want to say I feel jealous of Nikita, but I try to follow him in that joy, and I try to be as present in every moment as he is. And it's very hard. We have so many distractions, and with this cult of being busy and devices and screens around us, there are so many that we can put our attention away from what's happening at each given moment. And spending a day with my son and constantly having to come back to now, it's great practice.
I knew you'd come up with something profound, so there it is. Thank you for that. So you're currently living just outside of Toronto. Do you have plans on returning to the rainforest in the coming years? Or
I regularly go to Peru. I recently just came back from the Andes in the mountains, just in time before the lockdown.
Yes.
Where I worked with Wachuma, San Pedro cactus medicine in the mountains. At this moment, I'm not going to the rainforest because I have a small kid with me. So it's either going to be waiting until he's old enough that I can leave him with his father, or that he's old enough that I can take him with me.
Okay. So, yeah, I touched on this earlier, but there's the kind of a current trend around plant medicine. It's become a lot more mainstream. What are your thoughts on the recent popularity and greater acceptance? Do you embrace that, or is there concern for you around that?
I do embrace it, and I think that many concerns are also being addressed. I'm quite happy seeing how professionally it's being done. There's many organizations such as ICRs, MAPS, Ayahuasca Defense Fund that are working very hard on having a professional representation of psychedelic medicines, plant medicines in this world. We in Canada have already, I think, 5 exemptions by Health Canada for Santodaimi, which is a syncretic religion using ayahuasca and combining it with Christianity. So there are groups in Canada that can legally already use it as a sacrament. Definitely is just a first step, and I think we are moving in the right direction. And exercising caution and not rushing into things, and being responsible with how we talk about the plant medicines, how we use it. We have a very good chance of being able to work with these medicines legally in North America, hopefully in our lifetime.
Yes. Well, I certainly believe personally humanity needs this more than ever right now. So I hope this continues. Marie, let's just switch to music for a sec. For those who don't know you, you're a beautiful vocalist, a talented musician, and then you do a sound bath ceremony, which I've not had the pleasure of doing. Can you describe what that is all about?
Right. Well, I'm not a professional musician to start, and even though I did have some musical training when I was a kid and younger, that's not something that I thought I would be doing in my life. But as you know, sound is an integral part of ayahuasca ceremony. The energy is guided through Icaros or medicine songs. As I started learning and apprenticing, I was first working with medicine songs of my teachers. Then I started receiving my own. during the planned diets. And then somehow the musical part started getting more and more present in my work. I work a lot in North America, so I've had the pleasure of learning some of the North American traditions with drumming, and I have a drum that was brought by me from Siberia. Well, my partner is a musician who greatly encouraged all of my musical shopping for instruments. So slowly, I started acquiring more instruments that were related to some kind of spiritual traditions and healings in other cultures, from drums and fruity boxes and harmoniums, crystal bowls. I have a beautiful monolina, which is like a monochord type instrument, and a gong. Because throughout the human history, many cultures found ways to affect the energy through sound, because, well, everything is a vibration, and even each of our organ vibrates at certain frequencies. Yeah. And through using precisely tuned instruments, we can affect ourselves on emotional, spiritual, even physical level. And I found the medicine space to be a great place for such practice, but even outside. And this is something that I can do in Canada. So I regularly have sound bath events where myself and some collaborators, we combine all of those instruments to create, well, usually an hour-long soundscape, which is unique each time. It really is a call and response to energy in the room and around us in nature. And it's an opportunity for everybody who participates to really relax and do nothing, and allow the sound to carry them in a deeper state of consciousness, and attune the brain to different wavelengths where healing becomes possible, emotional processing becomes possible, and it's a great way to reset.
Wow. So after, yes, when we get past this pandemic, I'm definitely going to find you for a sound bath. That sounds amazing. Now, you've also recorded Unity songs, Northern Family, which is absolutely beautiful. I love listening to that myself when I feel the need to be creative, or just, as you said, just kind of relax and heal, and just kind of brings me back to the feeling of being in a ceremony a little bit. But and you also, all the royalties from that go to support Indigenous peoples in the Amazon. Can you talk a little bit about your recording and how people can find that?
Yes, absolutely. Well, as you already said, the album is called Unity Songs, and by the artist named Northern Family, which is a collaboration between myself and Akenda Yanariskwa, Slava D, my partner, who recorded the album, and a few other people who joined our voices. That's a result of our 3 years of singing together in the North, and it's a collection of original and also traditional medicine songs, both from the South and from the North America. It's, I think we have 11 tracks, 50 minutes of music. The album follows a little bit sort of an arc of a ceremony where we begin with Icarus and very meditative chanty songs and move into heavy hand drums and finish more on a lyrical note. So definitely for somebody who is looking for remembering their ceremonies, that's a great way to do it. And we are doing it out of love, and it's one of little ways of giving back to people of the forest. So any royalties that we collect, we are donating to a Unicorn community in Brazilian Amazon that were affected by the recent fires, and they had their cultural center burned down and part of the village burned down. So any money that we receive goes to that. And you can find an album on every major platform, from Amazon to Spotify to iTunes. Well, I do have to bring it up that Spotify is a great way of listening and sharing the music, but it's really not a very artist-friendly platform. So if you want to make sure that there is actually a physical contribution, I do suggest and ask you to buy the album in iTunes, because then we receive, I think, 80% of the money that you pay, whereas Spotify pays us something like 2 cents per listen, which is nothing really.
Right.
And again, yeah, it's Unity Songs by Northern Family.
Amazing. I definitely recommend that. It's beautiful. It's so unique. I've never heard anything quite like that. Thank you for that. So as we just get close to the end here, I just wanted to, one question I always ask all my guests. I'm so always fascinated by daily routines and meditation habits and things outside of your motherly duties. What is your, maybe your personal self-care daily routine, and you know, meditation or however you conduct your day? Is there something that you follow every day as a habit?
I don't think right now there is anything that I do every day, but nature is my medicine, and that's one of the reasons why we live not in the big city. I have many beautiful hiking spots around my house, and being able to spend several hours a week in the forest is essential to my emotional well-being.
Yes, I saw your post today. Relaxing takes practice, which is quite timely right now, with everybody's sort of locked down for this pandemic. What do you think the world is going to look like once we get past this COVID-19 pandemic? Do you feel there's a shift happening, a change happening, for good or bad?
I can't really make predictions of what it's going to be like, because we're still in the middle. And as somebody says, never waste a good crisis. So we have an opportunity to, it is an opportunity for a shift. And where we decide to shift our world is entirely up to us. So I think right now what's important is relax, look at what is really important, what is the message that's coming to us from what's going on, and what it is that needs to be changed. But I'm not yet looking for an answer or solution, because right now I think it's more important just to be present and pay attention and to remember that this is the times we've been practicing for. If you've had meditation practice, any kind of mindful practice, ceremony practice, well, this is when it's really needed.
Yes.
And this is when we can exercise this. And it's the same like in the ceremony. You drank a cup and you're going for a ride. And you can either ride it or be dragged. And the same
yes.
Right now.
Right.
Acceptance doesn't mean passivity, in my opinion, but acceptance of what's happening, relaxation and a certain observance. And I think that's going to take us in the right direction.
Yes, some helpful wisdom right now for those who are listening. Maria, how do people find you and follow you? You're also a beautiful photographer. What's the best way for people to follow you or connect with you?
Well, I have a very easy social media handle. It's one word, Aya Ceremony. You can, AYA Ceremony. You can find me that way on Instagram, on Facebook. And I also have my own website, ayaceremony.com. So you can follow me, or you can even send me a message.
Beautiful. Maria, so grateful again for having you here today to do this. I think it's a really beautiful message and for people at this time. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure talking to you.